welcome to Tremendous Tales with me, Liz Pichon. I write and draw all the Tom Gates books and other books like Shoe Wars. This is the podcast where I ask my brilliant guests the very important questions like, what's your favourite snack? I'm looking forward to hearing a tremendous tale and a tremendous fail because we all make mistakes. There'll be lots of lovely book recommendations, and I'll also be asking you, the listener, to join in and play along with our very fancy high-tech game we're calling What's That Sound? For obvious reasons. My multi-talented guest today is the fabulous Chaya Prabhat. Chaya is a graphic designer, illustrator, and lettering artist from Chennai, India, currently working out of Goa. After completing an MA in graphic design from Savannah College of Art and Design, she has worked on a number of picture books, including The Culture of Clothes, The Best Diwali Ever, Bracelets for Beena's Brothers, and Hide and Seek History, The Egyptians. Do go out and check out Chaya's website. It's an absolute feast of colour and full of gorgeous details. I've spent a lot of time looking at it recently. It's absolutely beautiful. She's previously worked with several clients such as Penguin, Hachette, Facebook, Google, and the Obama Foundation on digital illustration projects. She has received awards for her portfolio and projects from Behance and Adobe. And I'm really looking forward to chatting to Chaya about her work. So hello, how are you? And thank you so much for joining us all the way from Goa today, I believe, isn't it?
Yeah, hi. And thank you so much for that introduction.
Well, it's nothing to do with me. It's all your wonderful work. And I said, I've really enjoyed looking at your website. And I just thought, oh, it's so beautiful. So many beautiful colours. One of the things I really enjoyed looking at on your website was your sketchbooks. So do you do a lot of sketching then, and do you go out and do live sketching?
I used to before the pandemic, and then things got a little hard because we were not allowed to step out for a while. And then it's just since then people have stopped wearing masks now, but I just didn't like sitting outside. It's really hot outside, you know, so I try to wear a mask and sit outside and sketch is just...
It's not much fun.
It's a lot of work. Yeah. So I've just stuck to sketching indoors now, but I should start going back and sketching.
And also you do a lot of lettering as well. When you were younger, did you always draw? Were you always creative as a child? And did you have other people in your family or in your life that were creative that maybe influenced you?
Yeah. I've always drawn. I've not been good at anything else. I was no good at sports, no good at dancing or anything. So drawing has always been my thing. And luckily for me, I have an older sister who is also a children's book illustrator now. And she also used to draw a lot growing up. So it's kind of, I used to watch her draw and it just like went along with it. So.
Do you have the same similar sort of style? Did you like drawing the same things or have you developed in a completely different way?
People say that our styles are similar, but I think if you asked both of us, we would disagree. So my work looks wildly different to hers, if you ask me, but a lot of people say that our work is similar. And I think that just happens when you grow up with the same experiences and looking at the same things, you'll just end up with a similar style, I guess.
I know, particularly the colour palette that you use. I was just really struck, you know, I was going, oh, it's such a beautiful sort of feast of colours as well. And also the text, and you're a lettering artist as well. So how did you start doing that?
So when I was doing my master's at SCAD, there was a typography class. I had a professor who was really, really into type. He was very passionate about it. And I used to hate typography. I just used to hate lettering. I just didn't understand how typefaces went together. I felt like it was like a secret language that only designers knew. I was kind of always like avoiding it in all my projects. And then for my final project, my professor came and told me, he said, you have to hand letter this entire project. I'm not letting you use any fonts for this project because I know you can do it. So I was really scared. And I think I spent an all-nighter just working on this project because I didn't know how to do it. But then I'd been given this restriction, so I had to do it. And then I spent all night working on it, and then I ended up really enjoying it. Since then, it's something I really love. I've tried to include it in all my work. You know, even if it's book covers, I hand letter the title and stuff.
All that you do hand lettering, and I know that you work digitally as well? You would do the hand lettering and then maybe scan it, maybe work on it on the computer.
Yeah, afterwards. That's one way to do it. Or I would just, you know, use a tablet and draw it on digital Photoshop.
So there you go. So you were encouraged to do it by a professor who could see that you were going to be very talented at that and brought that out.
Yeah, he could see that I just had a mental block about letters for some reason. He's like, they're just drawings. They just switch off the part of your brain that's reading it and just try to draw it.
How did you get to be in America then for studying?
So I actually went to SCAD, which was, they have multiple campuses all over the world. So they had one in Hong Kong, they had one in France, and a couple of campuses in the US. So I actually went to the Hong Kong campus for the most part. So I lived and studied in Hong Kong for about 4 years.
How old were you when you did that?
I was 21 when I started, or 20 when I started.
Was that the first time that you'd been away to study, or have you been traveling before on your own?
No, it was the first time I was living on my own or living outside India.
And wow.
Hong Kong is just incredible. I really wish I could go back. It's just such a melting pot of people and things. And if you want to do anything, you can find a way to do it there. If you want to hike, there are mountains. If you want to go to the beach, there's a beach. If you like urban settings, there's so much of city there. So that's when I started.
Imagine you with your sketchbook. Then really going out and sketching. And do you think all the travel and the fact that you have been to other countries has really influenced your style and what you like and what you enjoy drawing and illustrating?
For sure. Because every time I travel somewhere, I come back and I start drawing the things that were in that place, whether I realize it or not. Mm. So if I travel somewhere with a lot of greenery and then like put my next picture book, somehow the greenery just creeps in into the drawing. Well, it makes a huge difference, like traveling and drawing. I need to do more of that.
Well, part of that traveling as well, you've obviously tasted lots of different types of food, which brings us nicely round, because I'm imagining that I would like very much to hear more about your snack of choice, Chaya. So here we are. This is a section we're calling
Snack Chat.
So I love your snack of choice, first of all, and it gave me an opportunity to obviously go out and get some, and I have already devoured half the packet already. So would you like to tell us what keeps you going there, and why have you chosen this particular snack?
So my snack of choice is popcorn.
Hooray!
I pick popcorn because that's my current favorite snack, because I've been eating a lot of it for a while now. So I actually had a couple of Indian snacks as well that I was considering telling you, but I didn't know if you would find it there or if you would.
Oh, I don't know. We should tell us anyway.
So there's another snack called Murukku. It's like this, it's just like a little swirl. Mm-hmm. In texture, I would compare it to like maybe a hard pretzel.
Right.
And it's just really salty and just something that I snack on a lot as well. I don't know if you would find it because it's kind of niche even for India.
How do you spell that then?
I would spell it in English as Murukku. There are Indian grocery stores around. I think you should be able to find it.
That's one of your choices, but you settled for popcorn. So I'm guessing, would that be salt popcorn or sweet popcorn?
So we get popcorn with flavors here. I don't know mm-hmm. if you also get, we get it with a little flavor packet, like a seasoning packet.
Oh.
So you heat up the popcorn. You may do it in the microwave. Then you take it out and then you can open the seasoning packet and then just add it to the popcorn and then just shake the whole thing. So it gets coated in all the seasoning.
And what's your favorite seasoning then?
My favorite seasoning is cheese, but we also get masala, and we also get barbecue flavored popcorn, which is great when you're watching something on TV, just to snack on. It's really interesting. I'm not sure if seasoning on popcorn is something that's unique to India, but
the only thing that I remember like that was we used to do like packets of crisps, and it would come with a little bag of salt, and that was supposed to be it was just salt and shake, and you would literally just add your own salt to it. So it was like a novelty, like a little bag of salt. But no, I haven't seen it with popcorn though. I mean, the tendency of popcorn tends to be like covered in caramel. I've always made popcorn where You add butter and sugar and all kinds of things to it. I've burnt many a pan trying to make popcorn, like caramel popcorn for the kids. So I haven't seen it with the little extra bags of seasoning in it. I did a little browse on Wikipedia, and apparently popcorn is a very, very old snack. Archaeologists discovered that people have known about popcorn for thousands of years. Fossil evidence from Peru suggests that corn was popped as early as 14,700 BC. That's pretty old, isn't it? Oh, 4,000, sorry. Maybe not that old. Thanks, Mark. 4,700 years BC. Popcorn's accessibility increased rapidly in the 1890s with Charles Kreter's invention of the popcorn maker. That was in Chicago. Popcorn isn't recommended for very young children for obvious reasons. So I was saying, you don't make your own then. You buy the popcorn, stick it in the microwave, and then you add your little bag of savouries.
Oh, I didn't know you could make popcorn from scratch. You could just buy the corn and pop it yourself.
Yeah, you can. It's an excellent choice of snack. And I can imagine you working away and snacking on your popcorn at the same time to keep you going.
I have a rule.
You have a rule? Okay.
Yeah, no snacking near the laptop. This is like a tropical place problem, but we get ants if we leave our snacks around. I've had many experiences where I've just opened my laptop and red ants have just come out of it, and I just can't afford to do that anymore. So snacks and food away from my gadgets.
That's very sensible. I know I've had a problem occasionally if I've been down to the beach or something and I've taken a laptop and I thought, I'll do a bit of writing, and then I've got bits of sand and stuff stuck on your laptop, so that's a bit of a no-no as well. Yeah, that's something we haven't had so far, like ants in your laptop.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's a unique problem that I think I've faced it like one too many times.
Yeah, it's one of those things you learn, isn't it? Like saving. You mean you didn't save? You haven't put it on a hard drive? You do it a few times and then you never do it again.
Oh, that was going to be part of my tremendous fail story.
Oh, okay. We'll save that one then. Well, thank you so much, Aya, for your snack of choice. That's opened up a whole new world of possibilities of popcorn that we didn't know about. So that's good. Okay, so now this is the part of the podcast that we come to your tremendous tale.
Tremendous tales.
So, Aya, you've already told us some tremendous tales already, but we'd love to hear what other ones that you have to share with us.
This is not a very tremendous tale because
Do you know, everyone says that, and then they go ahead and tell us a tremendous tale.
For most of my life, I've just been sitting and drawing, so I haven't been on a lot of adventures. But I have, like, small things have gone wrong in my life, so those are my stories. So when I was a kid, me and my sister, we used to go to school in the car, and our school was a bit like, it was around 30 minutes away from home, and it was obviously very early in the morning, so I used to be really groggy in the morning. So, and we had a school uniform, which was we had to wear white canvas shoes every Monday to school. So I used to do this thing that really annoyed my mother, which is I used to grab my shoes and my socks and wear it in the car on the way to school instead of wearing it before getting into the car. And then, so one day I was especially sleepy. So my sister and I both keep our shoes on the same shoe shelf. And I just grabbed two shoes, got in the car. And I used to actually start wearing my shoes right before we reached school because I needed as much sleep time as possible in the car. Right before we reached school, I started putting on my shoes, and I realized I grabbed two of her shoes instead of mine, and both were for the left foot.
Oh no!
Easily done.
And we were minutes away from school and I had no shoes. This was when I was maybe 10 and she was 15, so there was a huge size difference.
And what was your sister wearing then? Were you wearing her shoes? What was she wearing?
She was normal. She wore her shoes before getting into the car. So I was the one who had the issue. So I had no shoes. We almost reached school. So I panicked, and luckily I had a friend who lived in the building next to school. So I ran up to her house without any shoes, just barefoot, just ran up to her house and knocked on the door. And she had already left the school, so her mother opened the door. She was really shocked to see me. She thought something went really wrong. And then I just said, can I please have your daughter's shoes? I really need shoes. I can't walk into school barefoot. So she gave me her daughter's shoes. And they were actually a little small for me, but I managed to somehow squeeze my feet into them. I couldn't walk really well in them, so I just stayed behind my desk the whole day, you know, for that one day.
The fact that you actually managed to have the presence of mind, though, to find a friend who'd got similar size feet to you and actually get some shoes on your feet. Because if it was me, I probably would have just worn the two wrong shoes the whole day.
But they were so really big. Like I wouldn't have been able to walk two steps.
You have to do that thing when you put your feet in them and just sort of shuffle.
Yeah.
So you never did that again then, I'm presuming.
Never did that again. I learned my lesson. Wore my shoes before going to school, or at least looked at what shoes I was picking up before, you know, getting into the car and rushing to school.
Would you have got into a lot of trouble then at school? Were they quite strict?
I think they did. They would call your parents, or they would make you stand outside for one class. But I was not a rule breaker, so any transgression made me very panicky. I was a very good student. Never got into any trouble, so this was a big deal.
Mark and I are staying silent on that one. So thank you so much for sharing your tremendous tale. And that brings us on very nicely to the section of this podcast that we are calling What's That Sound? So this is the part where we listen to a sound, and it usually bears absolutely no relevance whatsoever to anything that we've talked about. And Mark, we're hoping he's going to give us a little clue afterwards, but have a listen to this and you can listen at home and play along. That sounds a bit sad, actually, doesn't it? Can you give us any clues at all? Chaya, have you got any ideas about what that sound might be?
To me, that sounded like a bunch of monkeys screeching for something.
Well, it sounds like an animal of some kind, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Let's have another listen.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like an animal.
It sounds like a creature.
Yeah.
It sounds a bit sad, actually, doesn't it? Like a... I can hear sort of birds and things in the background.
Yeah.
Is this like a big creature or a small creature? Can you give us a clue?
It's a small creature.
Oh, it's a small creature, so not...
Is it a kind of bird?
Some kind of bird. Nope.
Is that it? Is that all you're giving?
That'd be pretty hardcore.
It's like from all the creatures and animals in the whole world, we're getting, nope, it's not a bird.
I'm sorry. I can tell you what country it's.
Oh, okay.
It's from Malaysia.
Malaysia. So it's a small creature in Malaysia. Go on, let's have another listen then. Let's have one more listen.
Is it a rabbit or some kind of furry small thing?
A furry small creature. What is it then, Mark?
Yeah. It's definitely not furry.
It's not furry. Okay, you might have to put us out of our misery. What is that noise, Mark? Go on.
It's a type of insect.
Ooh.
Any further guess?
A type of insect, what do you think?
A cricket, because there's one a really annoying kind of cricket here that makes a screeching sound, but it doesn't sound like this at all.
It's not far off, actually, is it? I don't think it's far off.
No, it is in fact a beetle.
Ooh.
I don't understand why a beetle would need to make such a loud sound. It's because it's really loud. It's like And it's really long.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It almost sounds like the sort of noise that you make if you have a balloon and you pull it very tight when the air's coming out, and it makes that sort of slightly screechy noise.
Yeah. It's the same sort.
Okay, let's have one more listen then. Now we know it's a beetle making it with its wings. It's probably some, like I said, it's probably some kind of mating call, isn't it? And they normally are.
Yeah.
It's quite annoying, though.
If there were a beetle outside making this noise, I would panic. I don't know what I'd do.
I know you're supposed to embrace all nature and creatures, but yeah, I agree with you, Chai. If that beetle was making that kind of noise outside, I'd be furious. Well, anyway, there you go. So we had a game of, and actually you weren't far off. I think saying it was a cricket of some kind, considering we gave you very few clues, was a pretty good guess for me. So well done, Chaya. You almost got it, I think.
Tremendous fail.
But would you like to share with us a tremendous fail? Because I always think that sometimes you learn more about the things that go wrong than you do when they go right.
So my tremendous fail story is, like we talked about before, something to do with not backing up your files. Back when I was just starting to figure out my style with digital art, and I mm-hmm. was working on a huge project for uni. It's one of the first projects that I worked on. And I put in so much work into it, and I was working out of my hard drive. I had no files saved on my laptop. It was all saved on my
hard drive. I'm breaking out in a cold sweat just thinking about it.
Yeah, I'm really not sure why I did that. I remember I was on, so this was in Hong Kong, and I used to take a 40-minute bus ride back home from the lab where I was working. On the bus ride home, I was just looking through my backpack, and I realized that I didn't have my hard drive. So I panicked and took another 40-minute ride back to school to go search for it, because it's so important. And then I looked and looked, and I couldn't find it. I think somebody stole it. Everything that I worked on was just gone, and I was so sad. But luckily, I had a flat image of what I'd worked on, because I'd sent somebody a picture. Like, I'd just taken a picture on my phone and sent it to somebody and said, this is what I'm working on. I had to redo the whole thing. The deadline was in a couple of days as well. So I had to rework the whole thing from scratch. But this is one thing I've realized after this has happened to me so many times. I've realized that if you have a reference of what you've worked on before, the second time round, it's a lot faster, and you can also like make all these little improvements in, you know, what you didn't get right the first time. So I did manage to get it done in time, but that was a good lesson for me. Just always make copies of what you're working on.
I know Mark's always saying that to me. He's just like, have you saved it? Have you? I'm like, of course I have. No, I haven't. But it's one of those things, isn't it? You learn and you do it once or twice, maybe, and then you hopefully never do it again. Or like you said, you have a copy or a digital copy or a hard copy so that you can... But it happens to everybody, though, and your heart just sinks, doesn't it?
I was so sad. I was so sad because I just figured out, like, I'd gotten into such a groove with what I was working on. I just figured out my style. I was really happy with what I worked on. It was all gone.
I like the fact that you said when you had the chance to redo it, though, that you actually could do it faster, you knew what you're doing, and you said that you actually started to make improvements and make things better. So that's kind of like a positive thing, isn't it? That's like a small positive out of the thing that went badly wrong.
Yeah, in hindsight I can see the positive, but when I was reworking it, I was so angry. Why would I do this? Why would I work out of a hard drive?
The fact you got it done and it was all fine afterwards, so well done. Has that ever happened to you again? Or
to take it back to the ant problem, they had actually, the ants had actually eaten a bit of the wiring inside my laptop, so it started switching off all of a sudden while I was working on like things. And I think one of the times that it switched off, it, one of my files just got corrupted in the process. So I actually had to redo something again. So now I have a good system in place. Whatever I'm working on just gets backed up to the cloud as I'm working on it. So I don't have to worry about that ever again. But yeah, this has happened one too many times.
That's also, that's a very good tip as well. I like that you have an ant problem. Well, thank you for your tremendous fail. And we're very glad that this is not a recurring problem, hopefully. So this is the part of the podcast, Chaya, that I'd love to know if you could share with us like a tremendous tip, something that you do with drawing or your lettering that you think would be really useful for people starting out.
Yeah, I think one thing that I do whenever I work is I always start really, really small and start really rough. I think for me, things always go wrong when I try to, you know, start at a really big, if I have a huge sheet of paper and I just start drawing on that sheet of paper, it's all of a sudden it just becomes really daunting and I start overthinking it and just, it's just all over the place. So I always start really, really small. It's a practice that they made us do in design school and it's super helpful. It's because if you have something figured out when it's really, really small, it's really easy to blow it up after that.
Yeah, that's a really good tip. And we spoke to Stephen Lenton the other day, who's another author and illustrator, and he started off doing sort of animation as well. And that was one of his tips as well. He was saying to start to do something small because it's less daunting. So that's obviously something that quite a few illustrators do. And what kind of things did you draw when you were younger then, if you said you were always drawing?
I used to read a lot of comics growing up. So I used to copy a lot of the comics. I used to draw a lot of cats as well.
Cats?
Yeah. I used to draw a lot of animals.
Did you make up your own characters?
Yeah, I used to make up a lot of characters. I actually had a book full of comics that I had written with a character that I'd made up, just like misadventures of this one character.
Have you kept them? Have you still got them from your childhood?
Yeah, my mother stored it. She stored it all in my room back in Chennai. It's all still there.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you can look back at the things you did when you were a child and realize how they influenced you and how the things that you really enjoyed doing then is something that you probably, I don't know if that's true or not for you, but it's something that you look back and you think like, oh, you know, I can see where some of the ideas and some of the things that you really enjoy doing now, where they come from.
That's so true. That's so true. That's exactly how I feel when I look back at what I've drawn.
And also, I'm just wondering if you have a tremendous book that you would like to recommend, something that maybe you read when you were a child or something that you're reading now.
Yeah. So I've last week I was thinking about this book and I thought I'd made it up, like I'd imagined it. It's this book called Sun Bread. It's by Elisa Clevin. I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name right. This book is it's a children's book and it's about these animals that it's during winter and they really miss the sun. So they decide to bake a sun bread and just they make this really nice piece of bread that's shaped like a sun and has a face. And I really, the image of that sun has just stuck with me for so long because it looked so yummy. Like I remember last week I asked my mother if I just imagined that book because I don't remember reading it or I didn't remember anything about it other than the shape of that bread. And then I Googled it and I found out that it's actually a wildly popular book that a lot of kids really like.
It's funny, speaking to a couple of other illustrators, they both picked the same book, which was about a giant jam sandwich. And you've picked a book about a giant bread that's shaped as a sun. There's lots of food-based, that food really features a lot in children's literature, doesn't it? It's something that that is really important, you know, like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, all the sweets. But I mean, just anyway, we quite often write, I write about snacks and things in the books because I remember how important snacks were when you were a kid, particularly.
So true. My most recent book is about biryani. I don't know if you've ever had it. So it's called Annie Dreams of Biryani. It's my picture book that came out last month. And I'm really surprised by how many people connect to, you know, the book, despite never having eaten biryani. There are so many people that just really like the idea that it's basically just about a girl that is obsessed with biryani. So it's one of my favorite projects.
I think just remembering, you know, like it conjures up, especially when you see pictures and you can imagine the smells and the taste and the feeling, having your favorite food and all the connotations it brings with it as well. It sort of sparks off all these memories, doesn't it? Well, you've already mentioned one book, but in this podcast, we like to give our guests a really nice, shameless plug so you can talk about everything that you're doing.
Shameless plug.
Great. So, Chaya, you're obviously working on lots of different amazing projects, and you've mentioned the book that you've got out at the moment. But is there anything else that you would like to tell us about?
Yeah. So, I've already shamelessly plugged my my biryani book, which came out last month. And then there is also the book that I worked on, The Best Diwali Ever, with Scholastic and Sonali Shah, which I always like to plug that book as much as possible. And then another book of mine came out last month. It's called A Taste of Honey. Again, a food-themed book.
Food's featuring a lot.
Yeah, so that one is with Story Publishing, and it came out in the US.
Are these just books that you've illustrated for other people?
Yeah, they're books that I've illustrated for other people. I have a few ideas for writing my own book maybe someday, but I just find writing for children to be like really scary. They're just sitting there in my drafts now, and someday I'll have my own story.
I'm sure you will. I feel like we need that professor to step in now, and in the same way that they encouraged you to take up doing lettering, which you do so beautifully now, I feel we should encourage you to start writing your own stories as well.
Yeah, I for sure need somebody to just like breathe over my neck and just finish it.
You're going to have lots of publishers doing that, I'm sure, because your work is absolutely fabulous. And I've really enjoyed talking to you. And I'm sure people listening will have found out lots of great facts, great tips there on some illustrating, more about your work. And I would encourage everybody to go and check out Chaya's work, because it is absolutely gorgeous. I really enjoyed looking at it. And I've really enjoyed chatting to you too. Thank you so much for coming on and telling us your brilliant tales, your top tips. Thanks for adding popcorn to our list of snacks. That's been a new one. I've definitely enjoyed doing that. And you can hear more episodes of the podcast with more wonderful guests if you go to my website, which is lizpichon.com, and follow the podcast link. So Chaya, thank you so much again. You've been absolutely brilliant. We've really loved it. Thank you so much. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please do like and subscribe. And I've been told that it really helps other people to find it. And I would love as many children as possible to hear from these amazing creative people that I've talked to, and to get inspired to pick up a pen, a pencil, get creative, make up their own stories, just like we've done. So thanks very much for listening. Bye.